Welcome to the Proper Mental Podcast. Normalizing open and honest conversations about mental health by having open and honest conversations about mental health. Welcome to Proper Mental, episode 22, and my guest this week is Lucy Lord. Lucy is a self-taught cook who recently released the Sunday Times best-selling cookbook, Food for the Soul, and her aim is to share recipes made from real foods, cooked simply, done well, and enjoyed mindfully. And Lucy kind of takes this caring and mindful approach and applies it to all areas of her life. And that's really why I wanted to speak to her. I was really excited about this conversation. I had a few things that I really specifically wanted to get into. So often I chat to someone and just see what comes out. But with Lucy, like, I had some boxes that I wanted to tick. And we really managed to do that. It's a great conversation. We got on really, really well. She was so lovely. And we just chatted loads. And this could have been quite easily been a double episode, I reckon. But yeah, if you follow Lucy on social media, you know that she has certain wellness practices, stuff like meditation, yoga, journaling, gratitude, all that sort of stuff. And all these wellness things, we're told are really good for maintaining and improving mental health. And that's true. They work. They're fantastic. I use a lot of them myself. But quite often the way these things are packaged and presented to us isn't particularly helpful. So there's a lot of connotations around meditation and yoga, you know, that they're just for hippies. There's all the spiritual stuff that kind of comes with it. We're often sold them as a fix-all cure. People say, you know, you can cure depression with breath work and meditation. And, you know, those people are usually trying to sell you a 12-week, very expensive course. You know, and they kind of, it puts people off. It puts a lot of pressure on people when people are already dealing with a lot, and a lot, you know, modern life has such an impact on mental health. And then you're told that you have to get up at 4 a.m. to do an hour of yoga and an hour meditation and drink green smoothies and be a vegan and all this sort of stuff. And it's just not true. You know, I went down that route myself. Me and Lucy talk about this in the conversation. It's something she's experienced as well. But I went down that route where I was trying to do all the wellness stuff, and it was just too much. It was just too heavy. I was just trying to squeeze too much into my life. And even though it was good things, there were too many of them. And for me, it just became another stick to beat myself with, you know, because all these people were saying, oh, if you've got depression and you do yoga and meditation and gratitude and journaling, you'll be fine. And I was doing all this stuff and I wasn't fine. I was very far from fine. And I kind of lost a lot of hope, really. I thought I was done for, because if these things are supposed to help and they weren't helping me, you know, so what do you do? If the things that are supposed to help aren't helping, then what does that leave you with, right? And it took a lot of sort of playing around with, but one thing I realized for me is you have to do the ones that serve you and don't bother with the ones that don't. And that's individual. And also, you don't have to do all the things all the time, you know? So if you kind of do most of the things some of the time, then that works pretty damn well as well. And Lucy's brilliant at that. She's really relatable. She's really authentic. And she just kind of just does these things, but she balances it with a normal life. So, you know, she will talk about meditation, and, you know, she can also go out on a weekend and have a couple of gin and tonics if she wants to. And, you know, she does yoga, but she also likes eating cake and drinking coffee. And a lot of these Instagram gurus kind of tell us, you know, that, you know, you shouldn't be enjoying alcohol and coffee and cake and all that stuff. And we have to stick to green smoothies and, you know, silent retreats and all that sort of stuff. And I just love how Lucy does these things, like I say, really authentically, and just weaves them in and out of her life. To hear her chat about baking is nothing short of inspiring. She talks about the process behind it, you know, and putting love into your food and taking that time. And, you know, the way she describes it is like a mindfulness practice. I've never been particularly interested in baking, if I'm being honest. I think I'm the only person in the UK that didn't have a crack at a banana bread or a sourdough during lockdown. But after chatting to Lucy, yeah, I was inspired to have a go. So you might have seen that on my Insta story over the weekend. But I bought her book, and it's really, really good. And there's all sort of great stuff in there. And that approach, that self-compassion, mindful eating approach, is just something that I think is so beneficial to people, you know, to looking after yourself and really like caring about your own state of mind and the state of mind of others. And I suppose Lucy is like living proof that these things can work, and you can apply them how you want to apply them. You know, the dosage is up to you. But she's a really open person. She's really fun. She's really, just really nice to talk to. And she's a good advert for yoga and meditation and baking and coffee and cake. So it's really, really good. I hope you enjoy listening to it. If you'd like to know more about Lucy, Instagram's the best place to get her, at Lord Lucy, and her website is www.lordlucy.com, and you can sign up for her emails and join her supper club and all these sort of wonderful things that she does via her website. Her book is called Food for the Soul, and that's out now everywhere. You can get it anywhere you like. If you'd like to connect with me for the podcast, it's at Proper Mental Podcast on all the usual places. And if you'd like to leave me a review and do all that sort of cool stuff, it would be much appreciated. I think that's everything I need to tell you. This is episode 22 of the Proper Mental Podcast. My guest this week is Lucy Lord. Thank you for listening. Enjoy. How are you doing?
Oh, good. I'm well, thank you. Sorry, I'm like 2 minutes late. With the neighbors next door are building something outside, and where I usually sit to do any like video calls or anything, it's like in the background. So I'm just like,
no worries at all. No worries at all. It's always the way, isn't it? It's always the way. I could just do my neighbors through the wall, and I was thinking, please don't put the music on. Please don't put the music on.
I was like, how dare they? How dare they decide to start doing their garden?
Oh no, that's great. We can just dive straight in if that's all right. Fantastic. Oh, cool, man. So welcome to another episode of the Proper Mental Podcast. My guest today is Lucy Lord. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you so much for asking, Tom. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm great, thank you. Yeah, very, very well. Thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate your time, Lucy.
No problem at all. Thank you so much for asking me on. I've seen, I was listening to your episode with Amelia Thompson, who I love, and I think Paul Moore as well. So I was listening to those in the week. I've just come back from London. So on the train up, I was listening to them on the way up, and I loved it.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you for listening. You're the first person I've had on who said they've listened. So that's
Oh, really? That's
Yeah, no, Amelia was great. I live locally to Amelia. She's she lives around by here somewhere. Yeah, so she's quite well known for what she does. She's a fantastic conversation.
Yeah, she's lovely. I mean, I've never met her in person. It's one of those things with Instagram. It's like friends, like online friends. But I love the walks that she goes on. It must be around the Wirral?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I've been seeing the walks that she's been going on, and I'm like, wherever you live looks unreal.
Yeah, it's a stunning part of the world. Yeah, I'm not from here myself. It's my wife's neck of the woods. But it's home for me now, and it's amazing. Great. Yeah. So how's all the moving and stuff, because you've just come back from Australia, right? So
I came back from Oz about 2 months ago now. It feels like really quickly, but it was about 2 months ago, and then I was self-quarantining, self-isolating, whatever you call it, in Scotland with my mum, which is where I spent most of my years growing up. And then I've come back down south to Cheltenham, which is where I was before I moved to Sydney, and where I would consider, I'm not from here, but it's where I would, you know, went to uni and would consider home. So it still feels a little bit flustered. There's a lot going on, but it feels nice to have someone to call home and to go to the same bed each night and wake up and be like, I'm not living out of a suitcase.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, once we got a bed and a space, then everything else kind of falls in quite quickly.
And a kitchen.
Of course. Yeah, definitely. So that's a big change, because you're in Australia for a little while. But how are you with change, Lucy? Are you quite good at dealing with this sort of stuff?
It depends. I don't think I used to be. Whereas now I am, and I was just thinking about it yesterday, actually, in that a lot of the time change comes from us kind of out of the blue. And a lot of the time it's things that we can't control. So it'll be a relationship crumbling down, you know, on the other side, or we lose our jobs, or obviously COVID, those kind of things. And I think what I'm trying to learn and lean into more so now is like almost instigating that change, because I do believe that when you change and put yourself into an uncomfortable or a new position or situation, there's a lot of growth and lessons to be learned there. So I'm trying to instigate that more and more now, but it's definitely new to me still. And I was in Sydney, like you said, for 5 or 6 years and 5.5 years, and it flew by, but I never fully settled. And I quite like that. I quite like that constant changing, that constant growth. So I'm trying now to take the reins on that a little bit more and keep pushing that.
Yeah, sometimes I think it feels like if there's maybe not been enough change for a while, it's almost like life gives you a little tap on the shoulder and says, come on, you know, mix it up a bit. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've got a bit of a theory, and it is a theory. It's not based on any, there's no scientific papers out there to explain this, but I think we're, as a species, we're good at change, right? I think it suits us, but maybe it's some of the sort of societal ideas around change, or maybe some of our modern coping mechanisms of change maybe don't serve us very well when these things happen. But if you look at it, you know, you mentioned when things happen to us, like the life stuff, people go through stuff all the time that if you said to them beforehand, this is going to happen to you, they'd say, I can't do that. I can't cope. How can I handle it? And then these things happen, and we put one foot in front of the other, and we take them on, and we get through it, and we come out the other side. And I think we don't always like pat ourselves on the back enough for that sort of stuff, but it proves we can all do it. We've got that inner resilience, but it's too easy, isn't it, to get trapped in a comfort zone or in a box or in a label or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, especially I think when, you know, we live in such a world of comparison nowadays that even if we want to change something, we might look at the friends we have or the people that we have around us and think, but they're so happy with what they have. Why aren't I? Why can't I just, almost force happiness on this situation rather than taking the initiation to change something? Because it is difficult to change something, I think, especially nowadays, where it's so like there's this pathway almost of happiness or success or whatever you want to call it, and if you're not on that pathway, it almost seems like you're doing something rogue.
Yeah, definitely. Like you think you should want what everyone else wants, or everyone else should want what you want, and all that sort of stuff. Yes. Complicated. We're a complicated bunch, us human beings. If we could go maybe pre-Australia, Lucy, if that's all right with you. And it kind of feels like, your traveling, your experiences there had like a really big impact on yourself and how you approach yourself and your life and stuff like that. But could we rewind a little bit and sort of talk about Lucy pre-Australia? You know, where was your headspace and where did that desire to travel come from?
Yeah, of course. And I think it kind of fits in really nicely around to what we were just saying, because I was on that very stereotypical pathway of I'd been to university, I'd moved down to Cheltenham or Gloucestershire, been to university, got a really good job, had a really nice like company car, bought a house, did all that kind of stuff, had a really nice, well, I say really nice, had a really good looking boyfriend, ticked all those boxes, really good friendship group. And there was just something inside me that was almost like complacent. And just like, is this it? You know, is this it? Is this it? When am I gonna, feel that happiness? When am I gonna feel that almost like relaxing into life? Because it was like this constant chase. And then, of course, what goes hand in hand with that is going out every weekend and almost, I didn't realize it at the time, but almost kind of running away from the uncomfortableness that was my normal Monday to Friday life, really, and just going out every weekend and just, being a complete write-off, and then hating myself during the week, and then just kind of repeating that. And I think if you were to look from the outside, you probably couldn't, it would just probably just like many normal 20-something year olds' lives. But inside, it kind of felt like I was like an apple or something, just rotting from the inside, because I was just so unhappy and so unfulfilled and so unfulfilled with everything. And then you start grasping at, well, maybe I need a nicer car or a nicer salary or a nicer, handbag, shoes, those kind of things, and just funding this lifestyle that was just digging the hole even deeper, really. And so one of the girls I went to school with in Scotland, randomly out of nowhere said, look, I'm fed up with the life I'm living. She was up in Scotland, she's like, I'm fed up with this, I'm going traveling, I'm going to move abroad. And I was like, do you know what? I'll come with you. We had no idea where we'd go. I had no money saved up, like nothing. I was in loads of credit card debt, despite having all these beautiful things and nice car and job and all the rest. So ironic. And she was like, yeah, let's just go somewhere. And within the space of 4 or 5 months, just decided, like, it was almost like this is my only way out, really, because I was so unhappy and unfulfilled where I was. I was like, I need to do something, and it needs to be something more extreme than just, you know, go to yoga or meditate or all those kind of things.
Yeah, sometimes you have to kind of like rip the rule book up, don't you, and just start again from scratch. But is it really interesting what you say there, because I think like a lot of the distractionary stuff in modern life is so commonplace, we don't realize that it's a distraction, you know. And it's very, very familiar to me what you just said. You know, for a long time I did a lot of the same stuff, and I didn't need to acknowledge the fact that I wasn't very happy because I always had something else to do. I always had another night out to go on, or another football match to watch, or whatever it was, because that's what everyone else is doing, right? And you kind of think, well, you know, everyone else is doing it, they seem all right, I must be all right, just crack on with it. But yeah, we'll always get to a point where maybe enough's enough, and something has to give in some way, and that, you know, we make that big.
Yeah, and I think distraction is just, it's so prevalent now in so many different areas. Like, can I catch myself doing it if there's something I really need to do work-wise, or if I'm working recipes, whatever, I catch myself suddenly needing to like fully clean the house from tip to toe, or scrolling on social media, or just unnecessary things, rather than, you know, just sitting and being or doing nothing. It's just filling all these holes with things, because we're trying to avoid either the work or something uncomfortable or whatever it is. And we can use loads of different things, be it alcohol, drug use, nights out, football, sport, you know, sports, overworking out, exercise. There's so many different things, and I think that so many different things, especially in the UK, are branded as kind of normal. Like, yeah, it's normal on a Friday to go out and get shit-faced and all the rest, or it's normal to sit in front of the TV for hours on end, or it's normal to or it's seen as a good thing to be working until like 11 p.m. whatever it is. There's so many different facets that we can kind of escape to and not sit within ourselves sometimes and just be like, actually, how am I enjoying my life right now? What do I want to change? Just really simple questions that up until probably 26, 27, I didn't even think of asking myself.
Yeah, definitely. I really liked as well that you mentioned there that sometimes you catch yourself doing these things, because I think a lot of people assume that people who are more inclined into that way of thinking, it's just like zen all the time, and people, you know, we never do these stuff, and you're either the sort of person who can do it and the sort of person who can't do it. But that's not the case at all, is it? It's that awareness of catching yourself when you're distracting, and being I suppose being really, really honest with yourself and say, what am I trying to not do here? What am I trying to not think about? And you know, sometimes distraction's good, right? Like, you know, it can be really useful if you're aware of what you're doing and how you're doing it, then it can be quite a handy tool. And sometimes it is nice, isn't it, just to scroll or throw the telly on, or so it's trying to find that balance, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's like you said, it's not that these things are necessarily bad, it's just that we're so unconscious of doing them, and a lot of the times we're doing them to escape something else. So scrolling on your phone, like, I love scrolling on my phone, I love Instagram, I love Pinterest, I love all of that stuff, and there's nothing wrong, I think, with me being on there, as long as I'm doing it consciously and I'm not eating my lunch whilst I'm scrolling, whilst I know I'm thinking about something else, whilst I'm doing this or that. As long as I'm dedicating my time and space to one task at a time, it's ideal. But like you said, I don't know anybody who works like that, and even the people who I admire and look up to and are so successful in their field, they still struggle. But I think that because we don't see that side of them, either because we don't know them other than just through the internet, and all we see is them doing well and, you know, all that, and them speaking about getting 8 hours of sleep a night and all that stuff, it's just not that spoken about, that actually everybody has their different pitfalls and struggles and difficulties and distractions. And I think as an individual, it's just our own way of working through them and whatever works for us. And yeah, just becoming, really taking it back to each person is different, and each medicine, if you want, is going to be different for everyone.
Yeah, very much so. So was it when you set off on the road then, was it kind of experiencing these different cultures and, you know, stripping away, you know, having to be at a job for 9 o'clock in the morning and just changing all that stuff? Was it that allowed you to kind of get more in tune with, you know, with what you needed for yourself to be happy, that sort of stuff?
I don't think it was until a couple of years after, actually, because I remember, and anyone who's done like the traveling thing, and then we did about 3 months before I got to Sydney. And I remember at the time just thinking, I'm really going to appreciate this years down the line, because at the time it's stressful, you know, you don't know where you're going to be staying that night. Money is tight, and so you're not just, it's not like you're on holiday, you know, it's not a 3 month holiday. So it was really stressful, but really quite incredible putting yourself in that situation where you don't know anybody other than the MMA. You don't know anybody, you don't know the language or the culture or what's normal. I remember getting to Japan and going out for breakfast and being like, what do they have for breakfast? And it's like all these traditional dishes and like rice and eggs and that kind of stuff. And I was just like, what? This is not like nipping out and getting, you know, avocado and toast, whatever. And it was incredible. Japan is one of my favorite countries, and the culture is incredible. But it wasn't until a couple years down the line that I looked back and actually thought that was a situation that at the time was really uncomfortable and really new and quite challenging, but really helped me get to this place more, understand this more. But at the time, during when we were traveling and kind of finding our feet, I remember just having this feeling that I'd never experienced before of just like just inner kind of peace, I suppose. And just like, I remember it so vividly. We were in Kuala Lumpur in one of those hostels with, they had about, I don't know, 26 little pigeon holes for people to sleep in each room. It was a really nice hostel, but it was really crowded. And I was in my little pod, and I just remember thinking, I have nothing to do, nowhere to be. I don't have anything expensive on me. I've maybe like 14 kilograms worth of luggage. I don't have any designer label, not that I had designer labels before, but I don't have anything like more expensive than Topshop or New Look or something like that with me. And I haven't worn makeup in however long, and I'm so happy and just peaceful. And I'll never forget that feeling. I'm just kind of coming back to that feeling throughout the years that have since passed, and catching myself being in that dizzy head spin of, I've got to do this, you know, of being just busy and doing. So I think there are definitely kind of nuggets along the way that I remember of being like, oh, this is incredible. I should savor this and use it throughout the rest of my days.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, taking the time to savor the good stuff, I think is something we really neglect in modern life. You know, when something bad happens, we tend to think about it, we talk about it, we tell people about it. And then when something good happens, we go, oh yeah, that was brilliant. And then just kind of move on to the next, you know. But to get that minute to bask in that feeling and really feel that feeling. And I know what you're talking about. I've had that moment. And once you've had it, it's really, really hard to be, when you start moving, if you go into maybe a direction that's taking you away from that moment, you know, maybe whether it's back into the previous life, or maybe you make a decision and go in a different direction, you really feel it, right? You really feel that, like, this is taking me further away from whatever that was, that peace, that inner peace I found. This is taking me in a different direction. And it can be quite unsettling, you know. That's
Absolutely. And I remember almost like having this feeling. I think I was just woken up from a nap. We'd walked about, like, I don't know, 30,000 steps that morning exploring Kuala Lumpur, and just like, you know, as travelers do, just kind of getting used to the new environment. And I remember waking up and having this sense of peace, because usually waking up, it'd be like, grab your phone, check this, check that, or work, emails, stress, people to text, people to WhatsApp, but on a completely different time zone, it's like, you lose connection with everything. And because you have like, you know, limited Wi-Fi in a hostel, I don't even think we had any then. And I just remember being like, I feel so peaceful. But then after a couple minutes of that, or probably even seconds, thinking, ah, but, and like getting on my phone and opening my banking app and being like, ah, but I've only got like £3,000 in my bank account. And I mean, that at the time seemed like so much money, but I was like, I've got £3,000 and this has got to last me for 3 months, and I don't have a job to go to, and everyone keeps telling me how expensive Sydney is and all of the rest. And so it's almost like your brain starts to look for things to trip you up and be like, no, you know, you can't be peaceful. You must come back to this state of distress and disease.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. So from there, you went on to Australia, and was the plan to settle there? Was that always the plan, or is that something that just kind of happened?
It wasn't ever the plan. When I moved there, I always said it's going to be a for now, not forever thing. I'd never been to Australia before. I had no intentions of living there before. It was just a country that kind of popped up, and we were like, well, it's as far away from the UK as I can be. So we ended up there, and my friend already had a job set up and was living in the city. I was like, if I'm moving to the other side of the world, I want to live as close to the beach as possible. So I was in a hostel for about 8 weeks, just finding my feet and finding, you know, a job that I could do on my working holiday visa. And yeah, in the back of my head, I always had, it's for now, but it's not forever. And I think having that knowledge whilst living there for the 5 and so years was so helpful, because it really helped me savor all the things that I loved about it. And even the uncomfortable things and things I didn't like so much about Sydney. You know, you just kind of, you stand back and appreciate it rather than just judging it. So I think I always knew that I wasn't going to be there forever. And until I kind of had that feeling of like, oh yeah, I think for now is starting to run out. It was bizarre, and it's still bizarre now because I miss it incredibly. But I just had that feeling of, okay, I've done this chapter now, I've closed it, I feel content. And I kind of like, I had my routine of like, this is my coffee shop, this is where I go to yoga, this is where I like to eat breakfast, this is my job, this is whatever. And it was almost like the same situation that I had in the UK before I moved to Australia, but without the inner turmoil and without the, like I was quite depressed at the time. So without the heavy kind of depression and this heavy shadow that was, without the not knowing what I wanted to do in Sydney when I was leaving, I was like, I know what I want to do. There's this kind of light at the end of the tunnel. And I know that Sydney isn't going to be the place that's best for me to kind of challenge myself and bring that to light. And so it was a conscious decision to move myself into an uncomfortable position of, you know, leaving your job in the middle of a pandemic, coming back to the UK, starting from scratch, having nothing set up, and yeah, just deciding that it's time for a new challenge, I think.
Yeah, I suppose there's something really nice about sort of going there and saying, I don't know why I'm here, but I need to be here for a reason. And then getting to that point where it's whatever it is I was supposed to get, I've got it. And like, now it's time to go and see what I need somewhere else. Yeah, you know? Just, yeah,
that's exactly it. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, and I love the talking about the time limit thing. Actually, that's really interesting. So you know you're there for a certain amount of time. So you get all this stuff done. And I think sometimes as humans in modern life, we would apply that to a holiday or a traveling experience. Right, I'm only here for 5 months. I need to see and do absolutely everything. But you need to apply that to life, right? Because life is, all right, it's longer than 5 months, hopefully. But there's still a time limit, right? There's still, and I always think to when I like, so I've got two small children. And before I had kids, my wife used to work weekends. And Saturdays, I just wasted them. I did absolutely nothing. I just watched football. I messed about. I did all this time in the world and I didn't achieve anything. And now that I've got very little time to myself, I can get shit done because I've just got like 1 hour. And I think in this hour, I have to achieve all this stuff before I have to be a dad again. And I can get, you know, I can get it all done in the space. And yeah, putting that sort of that time limit on it, if we could apply that to life and say, well, you know, it is the experience, right? It is the journey. Let's cram in what we can.
Yeah. I've heard that's what kids does to you. I don't have any myself. I hear that's what kids do to you.
Yeah, for me it's a huge positive because I get shit done now. I've achieved more since I've had less time than I achieved in all the years where I had all the time in the world. So you know, it just goes to show. Yeah,
but it's like you said, it's having that conscious clock on everything. And I genuinely believe, like, Australia is an incredible country, it's beautiful, but I genuinely believe that one of the things that is so drawing to it, apart from the fact that it's almost impossible to move there and live there and work there and all the rest of all the visas, is that you know that you can't be there forever. Generally, you know that you can't be there forever, and then there's this ticking clock. And my decision was like, if I had residency, would I still be here? And I was like, no, I'd have left last year. And so for me, it's having that mindset on a lot of the things that I kind of do now, and not just sitting there comfortably and being like, oh, if I didn't have to do this, would I choose to? And so, yeah, I completely agree with what you say in that we have there's a ticking time on everything, be it, you know, life, relationships, those kind of things, you know, work situations, those kind of things. There's a ticking clock on it. And so often we don't sit and revel in the joys that it brings us, but also, you know, those Saturday mornings that you spent just watching the football, there's nothing wrong with that. But I think at the time, because it's just, you know, you're not putting much thought into it, you're not doing it consciously, it's just something that you get up and, you know, you get up and do. You might not have enjoyed it as much as you would now if, you know, your wife and two kids were away one Saturday and you're like, right, I'm having a day to myself, I'm doing nothing but watching the football. You'd probably revel in it 10 times as much now.
No, that's it. Yeah, very much enjoy it. Yeah. And it's kind of, well, I suppose one of the things I wanted to chat to you about, and just to start to bring this back into the topic of mental health, is that you are kind of known for a lot of like wellness practices, I suppose would be the best way, you know, things like yoga, things like meditation, stuff for, you know, exploring in that side of things. And there are a lot of things that get recommended to people for looking after their mental health. And so how did these things start to come into your life? So, you know, did yoga come first? Did meditation come first? Which was the first sort of you getting into that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I think it was meditation that came first, because I've always slept quite poorly, or I always had problems falling to sleep. And again, being quite busy and quite distracted and having a job that you couldn't, like you could just keep doing if you wanted to. That kind of fell into this lifestyle of just, I'm just going to stay up until 11 o'clock and then midnight, and then, you know, texting or doing whatever, you know, it was until it gets 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and then waking up at 6 to start all again. And unfortunately, I think it's kind of sieved out now, but unfortunately there was this kind of grind symbol of like badge of honor that people got for, you know, I only got 4 hours sleep or whatever. And I very much fell into that category of, oh yeah, this is great, I'm working hard, I'm exhausted, I'm living off of energy drinks and caffeine and such. And then as time went on and I found myself in this, like starting to rot from the inside, if you were using that analogy before, of just something's not right within myself, you know, my shadow feels a little bit heavy. It only perpetuated the sleep issues, and I was prescribed quite a lot of sleep medication to help. And one doctor at the time said, you know, you should try, I think it was meditation, Headspace app, whatever. And it must have been in 2013 or 14. So just as it was like very, very basic app, and I started doing it, and I absolutely hated it. And then through that path, it led to other things. And my thought on doing them was always, it's going to help me sleep, it's going to help my anxiety, it's going to help X, Y, and Z. And as time went on, you know, I found my own ways of doing them on my own, the yoga practice that I like to do and that kind of stuff. But those are my reasons behind doing them. But I absolutely despise them. And even now, I do yoga most mornings. I meditate every morning. There are very, very, very few days where I wake up and I'm like, I can't wait to sit inside my own mind for 20 minutes. You know, it's the reason that I do them now is because I have perceived the benefits that they bring, and they far outweigh the discomfort of sitting there for 20 minutes or, you know, an hour's yoga class or whatever it is. I do find that they are sometimes thrown around as like this blanket prescription of, oh, you know, you're depressed, here's some yoga, here's this, here's that. And I think, again, it comes back to the individual and just as people really listening to ourselves and thinking, what serves me? How do I feel well? How, you know, do I want to move? How do I feel when I move like that? Rather than holding mirrors up everywhere and being like, well, you know, Lucy says that she does meditation and yoga now and she sleeps really well, so I'll try that. It's more kind of looking inside of ourselves. And as a byproduct, I think that meditation, yoga, those kind of mindful practices enable us to look more deeply inside ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a much simpler way of tuning out those distractions we were talking about a little while ago, right? If you can start to find that way to connect with yourself. Yeah. And I there are a lot of these things. And like you say, yeah, it's like a blanket prescription for all of them. And what I found is for a long time was that I used to try and do all the things all the time. And that actually became like really detrimental to my mental health, you know, and it actually became almost another stick to beat myself with. It's like, oh, you know, I can't believe I didn't get up at 4 o'clock this morning and do an hour's yoga and then meditate and then have a cold shower and then drink some liquid broccoli and then do this and then do this and then do this. And it, you know, becomes all this sort of stuff that we're told to do. But you can cherry pick, right? You can just whatever works for you. And
you and me, Tom, I'm there with you on that, because when I started to, I almost like dipped my toe into this world of like wellness, and it was just as Instagram was coming about and it was very like clean eating and all that kind of stuff. And I dipped my toe into the world of wellness as it was at the time, which was, oh, I tried meditating, I've tried yoga, I feel a bit better. And then I was just, I was like, right, I'm a junkie, I'm gonna try everything. And I want to do it all really, really well. And so if I don't wake up before 5 a.m, if I don't see this, then my day's a write-off, my day's ruined. And that kind of like real black and white mindset of wellness, which is bizarre to think back at it, but at the time it was almost like I became so interested and curious in other people's morning routines and how they set themselves up for the day. And I'd be picking like all these things that Tim Ferriss is doing and Aubrey Marcus and people who have a lot more time, financial freedom than I did, and trying to replicate that in my own life. And I think that only kind of made me row backwards in terms of steps, because it was this added pressure of doing all of these things, and rather than doing them and now and then kind of coming to the position of being like, oh, this has made me feel better, more relaxed, it's made me aware of the fact that I'm really anxious or I slept rubbish last night, it was like, right, I've done my hour walk, tick, right, I've sat for 10 minutes meditated, tick, right, I've done this, tick. It became like a tick box thing where you're not actually doing them for the purpose, you're doing them just to say that you've done them. And yeah, I got myself caught up in that for a little while. And you're right, it's just cherry picking what works for you. And there's loads of people that I know that don't do meditation or yoga and still experience that kind of thing through their own systems. Be it like a lot of my friends do Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and that's their way of kind of zoning out and into the body. Going for walks, anything that it, you know, that works for you, it's in terms of keeping that and just building that into your life and routine. Because like you said, you've got two kids. And so for you to get up and have like this elaborate 3-hour morning routine, probably a bit out of the question.
Yeah, yeah. Usually it would be like interrupted and then I'd spend the rest of the day and go, oh, you can be like, oh, is the reason that I feel depressed because I didn't get my morning routine done, when of course that's got nothing to do with it, you know? That's it becomes like the opposite of wellness. And it's another reason I really wanted to speak to you, Lucy, as well, because with a lot of these practices, particularly with Instagram and stuff like that, they tend to, what puts people off is that a lot of the people that that do these things or advertising these things, or I can't quite think of the right words, but they go really, really extreme, right? So you have to have this 2-hour morning routine, and you have to have no furniture in your house, and you have to live in a tree, and you have to, you know, do all these like really, really quite extreme things. And one thing that I really get from your social media that I really, really like is that you kind of do these things, but in a very, very normal way. You know, you're not going to swap the, like it says in your book, which I've got here on the table, by the way. You're not going to take ingredients out to swap them for, you know, chalky protein powder and stuff like that. You know, you're still going to have sugar in your cake if you want a sugar in your cake. You just happen to eat nice cake and do a bit of yoga, you know. But I love that you can do these things and be like a normal human being who does go out on the weekend and does go and see their friends and does, you know, do all this different stuff. It doesn't have to be this extreme thing where you just dedicate your entire life to just, you know, wellness practices and being completely out of the box. You can be a fully functioning member of normal society, do normal stuff that normal people do, and just happen to have some wellness practices that kind of keep you ticking over mentally and physically, right?
And thank you so much for those kind words as well. I think it's so important to really live life on your own terms, and that's something that probably only in the last 2 or 3 years have I really started to think about and build more upon myself, because I feel like in a lot of these practices, be it yoga, be it you know, meditation, whatever it is, those are just the two that keep coming to mind. But I think that because there are some people who live by those and, you know, have really quite extreme practices, and there's nothing wrong with that, but they might also live this life of, you know, extreme veganism or raw foods or, you know, threading back to the clean eating and the paleo or the no alcohol or that kind of stuff. And I found myself kind of dipping my toe in all of those. And then I'd come back to myself and be like, but actually, do you know what? I really like a drink. I really like a gin and tonic with my friends. And yeah, okay, maybe I shouldn't have 16. And I'm not a perfect, you know, I'm not a perfect person, obviously. You know, I still go out drinking and I still occasionally wake up and I think, right, I should have knocked on the head at 11. But that's just part of living, I think. And just, yeah, living life in your own terms and thinking, I really like, you know, I love cake, I love croissants, I love good coffee, I love walking with friends, I love moving in a certain way. I love strength training. I love yoga and all of these kind of things, which I think so long we're told don't belong together. You can't live a wholesome life with them belonging together. And I've actually come to realize that that's not the case at all. And if anything, living a life based on my terms and how I want to live at this moment, it might change, you know, I might go teetotal one day down the line. But until then, I think why should I when I don't want to? And these are the reasons that I enjoy doing them. And it's not harming anyone. It's not harming, you know, myself. It's not harming other people. I really enjoy it. What's wrong with living a little bit? And likewise, having that compassion for other people who decide that, no, that's no good for me. You know, I can't control myself, or I choose not to do this because it makes me feel really rubbish. I'm the first one to stand there with a round of applause and be like, well done. That's, you know, that's awesome. There's certain things I don't do because they don't make me feel good anymore. And it can be difficult with peer pressure, especially when it's normalized by other people. But yeah, it's really just living life on your own terms and thinking, what do I love and how do I want to go through my days and what brings me joy? And in doing that, I really feel that it's made it a lot more accessible for other people to hopefully get involved in things that they don't feel that they can do because, you know, they don't like green juice. So how can they possibly go to a vinyasa class?
It's so true. Yeah, there's a lot of, there's a lot of stereotypes and a lot of connotations, and, you know, stereotypes are usually stereotypes for a reason, right? But, and yeah, that's fine for, you know, fine for people. But yeah, it's great that people can sort of think, well, I can embrace this stuff to look after myself. It's really interesting. You mentioned the word compassion there. You know, it's like it's one of my favorite words. I say it at least 4 times on every single episode. If, you know, if we can learn to be compassionate about ourselves and compassionate about to other peoples and, you know, yeah, bring that into the world, then, you know, it's a much kinder space. And I think with mental health related stuff, we're so forced into living life that maybe doesn't align with our values, you know, into, like you were talking about, your life like pre-Australia, you know, when you're kind of doing all these things that maybe don't sit right with internally, but you can only do that for so long before, you know, the cracks start to appear. And it's finding that authenticity and finding that way, your way of navigating this world is really, 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 really important, isn't it? To kind of almost design your own life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I love that term, design your own life. And I completely agree with you on the compassion as well. And I think that it really has to start from the inside and from yourself. And it's one of the most difficult things for a lot of people. But, you know, using myself as an example, I would put myself last and behind everyone else. You know, I'm much more interested in other people around me being happy than I am myself. And so you almost have to be quite selfish in that, which is really difficult and, again, uncomfortable. But in doing that and in working with yourself, you, that kind of compassion starts to spread to other people and other situations. And you just start to see situations a little bit differently in different lights. And, you know, friends are struggling, you're more of a support for them than just, you know, thinking your head or this, you know, judging it or that kind of thing. And so I really do believe that compassion, kind of starting from the inside out, it just completely changes the way that you see the world, and it completely changes your relationships and your friendships, all for the better. And yeah, I think it's probably one of the most potent things.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, internal change is just so, it's so positive. It's so fascinating because, you know, you can change the way you think about stuff. You can start to be more compassionate to yourself and to others and to show empathy and all this sort of stuff. And like you say, the way you change, see the world does really, really change, but your world necessarily hasn't changed, right? You might still have the same job. You might still have the same house, all like those things haven't, the material stuff hasn't changed, but you can be within it and have so much more peace. And I do feel that, and again, I say a lot about this podcast, I'm not a therapist. I don't diagnose. I'm not here to do this stuff. I'm here to have conversations that can be relatable potentially, you know? But yeah, this does seem to be this inner turmoil that comes from, you know, living in a certain way and in a way that doesn't match. And then we don't have compassion for ourselves. And then that slowly turns into not being very nice to ourselves. And then it's much easier to work long hours when you're not being very nice to yourself. It's much more easy to, you know, do the more harmful things. And it just becomes a vicious circle. But yeah, starting with that compassion, we can turn that into a positive circle, right? And start to make that be the change. I know that's a really stereotypical hippie expression, but it is, it comes down
to being. I'm here for it. I'm here for it, Tom. I'm all for that. But it is. And I think that it's so romanticized. Like you said, it's so romanticized to just quit your job and, you know, move to a different country and go traveling or whatever. And I don't know anybody who's done it that hasn't really struggled throughout the whole process. And you're right. I think that you don't need to change. There doesn't need to be this massive uplift of circumstances. You know, you can just slowly, day by day, start working on yourself, on things that make you feel good and feel like a better person, or whichever, you know, higher self, better person you want to be. And just slowly by doing that, you just start to see the world and things you have a little differently. And it might catapult into a huge life change, but it might not. And there's nothing wrong with that. And like, I've come back to the place that I left before Sydney, and I'm not a different person at all, but the way that I see things are completely different. And, you know, I haven't, there's certain things and behaviors and habits and that which has changed and kind of shed away almost. I see it like, you know, snake, like shed an old skin. But I'm really grateful for that. And what I've come to realize is that anybody who doesn't now live in the kind of realm that I'm working towards and I want to live in, you just kind of stop associating them or acquaintances and that kind of stuff. And it can be quite lonely, I found, coming back and being like, oh, my friends are still going out on benders, but I don't want to do that three times a week. So it's almost like that, starting from scratch again. But you do, like you said, see the world completely differently, and things that now would have like ruined my day, been absolute havoc, really caused me to self-sabotage or whatever it was, just barely even touch the surface now. Something still do, but yeah, when you see it like that and you see the contrast and you think, there's something that I'm doing, I don't know what it is, but there's something that I'm doing that's really helping me move towards that place of living in more peace.
Yeah. And you know, it's about, you know, that feeling that you mentioned before, you know, the more times we can feel that feeling and the more times we can, you know, work towards it. Right. How did that feel? How can I get back to that? You know, what was it about that feeling that made me, that made me feel it? So yeah, how can I work towards that? We've got to chat baking, right? How did that come into your life?
Baking, yeah, food cooking. I didn't know how to cook until I was maybe 22, 23, like early 20s. My mum had always been an amazing cook growing up. So we'd always been spoiled in that front, and I'd never needed to, you know, learn from scratch. And then when I went to uni, because I was a year younger when I went, I was put in the underage block where they don't give you like kitchens and utensils and stuff. So I just ate at what we called like the Rat Fat, which was just a cafe, like buffet cafe. And so I didn't learn how to cook until I'd moved out and got this first job, and I'd moved by myself to Birmingham. And I was living by myself in the city where I didn't know anyone. And I just kind of started, I was like, right, oh my God, I'm going to have to learn to cook. And I just started with Sainsbury's cook section or something, where the chicken breast is already wrapped in bacon and you just shove it in the oven or something. And it was just that exercise of doing something for yourself that can potentially make you feel good. I was like, oh, this is new. And it's something that I just kind of leaned into and then just started doing more of. And baking was always, because I have a really sweet tooth myself, baking was always just my go-to. And it's the easiest thing to do, I think, when you're going around to friends' houses or it's birthdays. I was always like, oh, an excuse to bake. And so I just kind of leaned into it a little bit more and just started doing it more, finding excuses to do it more. And I realized within myself, it's something I really, really enjoyed. It really challenged me. It kind of ticked all those boxes of something that was an activity that was satisfying, but also quite challenging, went wrong quite a lot of times, and you had to kind of start from scratch and build back up and all that kind of stuff. So it's just something that I really enjoyed. And then over the years, just did more and more and more of, to the point that I was like, oh, do I enjoy this more than I enjoy my job?
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so the plan was never to have to release a book, right?
No, never. And much like social media, you know, it took me so long to even do one. Like, the banana bread for me was the thing that I was like, I've created this recipe myself, I've started from scratch and I've created something that works. And it took me years to get to that position. And like, I'm happy to share this recipe with other people. It took me years to get to that position. So yeah, it was never anything that I had in mind, like I want to do a book, or I want to do this, or all the things that are now coming from it. It was just something that almost kind of organically happened when I let go of, like my biggest fear was, well, who am I to do that? How would I ever make money doing that? Who would ever buy my book? Who would, you know, all these kind of self-restrictions that we put in our own mind. And as soon as I kind of let go of that expectation upon my own self and just thought, you know what, it's something that I really like. And I'm just gonna try and see what happens. Everything just started to kind of build and blossom from then, which was beautiful.
Yeah, it's really cool that you can kind of align how you bake with a lot of the stuff we've just talked about, you know, like mindful eating and stuff like that. That's something that I think is really, really cool that I wasn't really aware of till I spoke to Amelia. But yeah, that kind of like fits in with a lot of the other stuff we were talking about. But I love the idea that of like really enjoying food and eating stuff that's cooked with love and come from a good place. So when we look at like cake, and cake's such a thing, isn't it? Because, you know, you can't eat too much cake because this is going to be bad for you and all this sort of stuff. But there's eating cake and there's eating cake, right? So there's like nipping off to the supermarket and buying a cake off the shelf in a box that for some reason the sell by date is like 6 months in the future. Like, how is that even a thing? Or there's eating a cake that's been cooked with, you know, with thought and it sounds really corny to say with love. I'm trying to find a better way of saying it, but you know, where someone's put that effort into it, into that time, into that produced it. And then it's just something else entirely, isn't it? It's like a whole different thing. Yeah.
It's a whole different experience. And it's baking with it's, you know, baking or cooking, whatever. It's with a sense of self-love. So it's for me, it's the same. It gives me the same satisfaction as a really challenging yoga class, or, you know, when I wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh, I've woken up late and I haven't done this and that, and I don't have time to meditate, but you decide like, no, you do it 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever, sit down and do it. And it's really horrendous. But at the end of it, you come out and you're like, okay, I feel good I did that. For me, baking brings, or cooking brings, that whole element together, and a sense of self-care. It's putting myself and my happiness and what I know feels good in front of all this other shit that doesn't, like inboxes and emails and other people's messages and my own self and my own mind telling me that I need to do this or do that. And that's all that creates me. And there's loads of different ways that people can find that feeling and connect to their you know, this feeling of, this is bringing me peace or happiness or whatever it is. And it's not cooking for everyone. It's not baking for everyone. And thank goodness, because otherwise I wouldn't have a job. But I think what's really important is finding what that is for ourselves that lights us up, and just doing more of that. And yeah, with food, I find that, you know, everyone's got a relationship with food, everybody. And it just happens that some people don't have a good relationship with food, or one that's more problematic perhaps. And what I found with being in the kitchen and being more connected to food in that way is you learn more about what goes in the food, you care more about what gets in the food. So things like, you know, if you go to your Tesco's and you buy the cake with a 6 month shelf life, there's nothing wrong with that, and they've got some great cakes there, but I could sit and smash that in an hour, and you don't have that same connection to it as if you sit and actually make it yourself, the kind of love that's gone into it. And I think that story and that kind of theme threads through the rest of life with everything that we do. You know, if you're just given money, you don't appreciate it as much as if you really worked for or earned it. And there's something, I put it in the book, I think it's like 80% of people who win the lottery go bankrupt within 2 years. And so I kind of see that similar thing with food for me, is that if I've really spent the time making it, and even like the food shops and all that kind of stuff, which I love, it makes me sit down and appreciate it a lot more than just constantly being grab and go and getting this, and, you know, the conveniences of Deliveroo and all those things, which aren't at all inherently bad. I absolutely love them. But I do think that if we live by that 24/7, 3 times a day, every day, it can kind of deter our own relationship with food and ourselves.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, taking that, when life's busy, taking that time out to just enjoy a slice of cake and your coffee. And even if it's only 10 minutes, you know, again, that in itself is a wellness practice, right? So we don't have
we don't have to put the world on hold to take a whole hour out to feel better. You can take just 10 minutes to just go, and just, you know, just find yourself some space and do something that's really nice for yourself. And then just jump back in, right? Just jump back in and you just prepped yourself a little better to maybe cope with whatever's going to be coming next.
Yeah, that's exactly. I remember my meditation teacher in Sydney, he was like, everyone thinks that meditation is this thing we've got to sit for hours on end in silence under a tree wearing mala beads, dressed in white linen, all of that stuff. And he was like, the simple essence or practice of meditation is to just come back to your current state or breath or whatever it is. And he was like, you can literally practice it when you're driving in your car, get the traffic lights and just take like a conscious deep breath. And I remember listening to that and being like, nah, that sounds like BS to me. Give me the hard stuff. Give me the 6 hour, you know, mantras and the 6 hour practice and like, show me the really hard stuff. And, you know, it's just overcomplicating something which is so simple in its essence of just, you know, taking those bite-sized chunks throughout our days as we're moving throughout our days and just being like, you know, just taking the time to relax and practice some sort of well-being and self-care. Be that sitting down with a really nice slice of cake that Moira has brought in from the office to celebrate someone's birthday or whatever it is, sitting down and really enjoying that and like allowing yourself to enjoy that, because I think that so often we don't allow ourselves to enjoy things, and even things that we really like, it's almost like this competitive edge comes across ourselves, and or you just move through it because you have something to do next, and you don't actually sit and, you know, bask in whatever you're doing and really truly enjoy it.
Yeah, we're so quick to move on. Yeah, that's completely right. I mean, sometimes if you need a big win, you got to stack a lot of small ones up to make that big win, you know, and and create that. And do you get a similar sort of piece from nature as well, Lucy? Because that's something that you talk about a lot on your social media.
Yeah, I love it. And that is one of the things that I just did not appreciate at all about the UK until I came back from Sydney. And obviously you go to Sydney and everywhere there's palm trees and beautiful beaches and oceans and all of that kind of stuff. But over time, you're like, and especially when you hear Australians speak about Europe and the UK, and they're like, oh, it's so green. And you're like, oh, yeah, do you know what it is? It is. And for me, that coming back and just experiencing, you know, I grew up in the UK for however many, 12 years, whatever it was. And I had all this stuff on my doorstep and I never enjoyed it. And I never went out. And I think that it's something that potentially comes with age, because I was more interested in, you know, hanging around bars and stuff and clubs. But now it's so peaceful and it's a real chance to disconnect. And I try often to just not take my phone, depending where I'm going. I try to just not take my phone out with me and just really be there and enjoy it. And a lot of the time I'll just be walking through and, you know, you might just run into all these to-do lists. But when you don't have something to click onto and to distract yourself, that slowly kind of dissipates. And then you get back after an hour or whatever, you get back home and you're like, I feel a bit better. I don't know why, but I feel a bit better. And so, yeah, I absolutely love nature, getting out, enjoying it. And I've had a whole new appreciation for the British countryside since coming back.
I think a lot of people, that's a positive that's come out like the pandemic as well, you know, because we haven't been able to go away. People haven't been able to go on their holidays and stuff like that. Been a bit more exploring where we live, you know, and stuff like that. And I think a lot of people are experiencing that sort of, again, seeing the UK maybe through different eyes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you just mentioned in your phone there as well. I just wanted to touch on your relationship with social media, Lucy, because that's such a strange space and that has such a big impact on people's mental health and on society and stuff like that. How do you navigate that? Your social media is you know, it's obviously a big part of what you do. Is you know, generally a positive experience? You seem to really enjoy it. That comes across in your social media. It seems you have a lot of fun.
I'm glad that you think it's always, you know, I think it's always so funny hearing other people speak about your own social media, isn't it? For me, it's, you know, there is like, I had no intention of moving into a social media space. I had no intention of ever creating this kind of I suppose job that I've found myself in now. And I do think that there's pros and cons of social media. And on one hand, it's beautiful to be able to connect with people that you wouldn't connect with otherwise. And a lot of the friends that I've made, be it ones I've met in person or ones I haven't, I've met online and on these platforms, and all those kind of things. You have similar interests and kind of learning from each other in that respect. But obviously that one of the negatives of it is this just time, like dark hole of time that you often find yourself getting sucked into. And on the way down that dark tunnel, even if you are consciously trying to not compare your lives, it is just what happens in the back of our heads and subconsciously. It's they're on holiday, they're happy. Oh, as soon as the whatever borders open, they've gone to Dubai, they've gone to Paris, it's sunny, it's like, it's raining here. It's just those kind of subconscious conversations that you can't control that go on in the back of your mind. But I try as best, I'm not good at it, I'm not very good at it, but I try as best as I can to use social media, Instagram, Facebook, all those kind of platforms to really enjoy it, like you said, and to consume information and people that I really enjoy and learn from, or you know, love watching and experiencing their stories or wherever they live in the countryside, whilst also you know, putting things out there that make me feel good and hopefully other people feel good. But for me, there is a pressure in the background of, oh, you should be posting more often and doing this and doing that. And so I very consciously kind of have that conversation where it's like, I don't want to, I've got nothing to post, or, you know, why should I? Why should I? I'm not a machine that needs to churn something out all of the time. And for me, if I'm not feeling great, then the last place I will be is on my phone, posting stories, posting stuff. And I think that's a really easy thing to do because you get that validation of likes or comments, or, you know, that kind of that almost like empty feel good. So I think for me, it's a real conscious step to, I post on there, I use Instagram, I love it. I want to use it on my own terms when I feel good. It's not the first thing I want to wake up to in the morning. It's not the last thing I want to see at night. I want it to be almost this like extra accessory that I can just dip into when I want to.
Yeah, that's a really lovely way of looking at it. Yeah, yeah. No, I
it sounds nice. It sounds much nicer than I experience it. Yeah,
yeah. It is. It's just such a tricky thing, you know. I always think this might be like a really rubbish analogy, but I always think social media is a bit like Jurassic Park, right? And in Jurassic Park, when Ian Malcolm says we spent so much time thinking about whether we could, we didn't stop to think about whether we should, and like suddenly social media is just here, you know, and we're all on it, and we're still learning how to manage it and how to use it. But it's really cool what you just said about designing it to suit yourself, because you don't have to look at things that don't make you, you know, don't make you feel nice, don't make you feel happy. Get rid of it, you know. And if you can spend time there positively, that's great. And that, but yeah, it certainly comes across in what you post, Lucy. Like I say, you have a lot of fun with it, and very, very authentic with it and stuff like that. And I think that's probably, like, you know, why so many people like to see what you're up to and that sort of stuff. Yeah. I find it really, really weird when I chat to people on here about social media, because I know you went away with your mates like the other weekend. So I was thinking, with the intro, should I say, oh, how was your weekend away? And then I thought, that's weird that I know about her weekend, but no, we don't know each other.
I love that. I love that. Especially like if you do live in a different country, you've got friends in different places. One of the things I love about it is that you can stay in touch with people and almost like keep on top of what they're doing, but keep in touch with what they're doing and how they are without having that necessity to catch up and speak to them every single day. And I think without social media, so many friendships would have fizzled apart, because you literally can't sit and phone all your friends for 10 minutes a day. It's almost quite forced like that. But on the blade edge side, I think that sometimes we then veer away from that in-person connection. And so for me, it's a balance of getting it right. But one of the best things I've done is turn off all my notifications for any of the social media apps. And I did that a few years ago, and I remember it was again to help with my sleep, because I was like, I can't sleep yet at night. I'm like, I can't sleep, why can't I sleep? and I remember at the time doing it and being like, how am I going to live without knowing that my best mates just WhatsApped me, or my best mates just sent me this meme on Instagram? How is life going to go on? But it is so freeing, and you slowly, or very quickly in my case, realize that nothing is of any urgency that is going on in Instagram, be it likes, comments, anything like that. Nothing is of any urgency. And so in that sense, it's kind of taking it back in my control again and being like, I'm going to go on when I want to, and I can see the feed that I want to read. and I'm gonna use this app as I want to. And if I want to sit for an hour and scroll through, I'm gonna do it, but I'm gonna do it on my own terms. It's not something that we just kind of fall into when, you know, we go to a cafe and we're stood in the queue and suddenly everyone's like, take the phone out and doing this. And like, I'm not perfect. Sometimes I do that, but I try and catch myself doing that and be like, what am I doing? Yeah. And so, yeah, just trying to make the apps work for you rather than against you. And I think it's a constant like dance between doing it. And then of course, what that means is I don't see a lot of messages. I don't see a lot of things that my friends might be doing that I might have missed. But I think the payoff is definitely more in my favor to keep it that way.
Yeah, very much so. I suppose, you know, you can double it back around and, you know, back to our conversation about cake, you know, you can sit and enjoy it and get what you need from it, or you can just shovel it down and move on and, you know, and maybe, not get the most out of that time, I suppose. So
consuming
social media is the same. Yeah.
So yeah, it is. Yeah. I love that. I love bringing it back to cake, but it is, I think at the time that I've sat and like, just mindlessly eating, or you know, overeating, binging food, and you don't appreciate it at all, and it's almost like this panic to, you know, whatever you're trying to avoid, you are just consumed in doing other activities that you don't even enjoy. And it's the same with social media. It's, you know, I know I should be getting up, I know that I said that I'd go to this gym class, or I know that I said I'd do this yoga that I don't want to do at 7 o'clock, but here I am scrolling on my phone for 45 minutes. It's exactly the same. I love that.
Yeah. And how are these things going to go on in turn to affect our mental health, right? Because I do think that in the mental health space, we talk a lot about what to do. It's very reactive. So we talk about what to do when life gets really, really hard. And that's a really important conversation. But at the same time, we also need to look at, how can we stop things getting to that position? You know, why are stats on the rise? Why is such a mental health such a concern? There is clearly something not right that, you know, that is affecting a lot of people. And how can we find a way of living that's maybe a bit more in tune to what we're designed for, or what makes us happy, or, you know, where can we all find that our own space that we need for us that's going to stop it snowball into that place where the wheels come off and the shit hits the fan? And, you know, finding these, you know, ways of mindfully eating and really appreciating our food and managing social media and, you know, doing just enough of the stuff that scares us, but not being too hard on ourselves that we're forcing ourselves to do it all the time. And, you know, we're like, a lot of the stuff we've just talked about, it just kind of like balancing all that. And I think it's going to go a long way if people are going to apply little bits, if anything, from this conversation, if they could just cherry pick one thing that went, oh, that sounded really good when they talked about that, and just maybe sprinkle it into their life, then it could make a little bit of difference, hopefully, you know.
Yeah, and it's just that constant dance every day through life of, you know, what's going to make me, you know, feel a bit better today or be a bit better. And then as a knock-on effect of that, we then become a better person to be around and all of that kind of stuff. But it is like a constant dance. And when I'm feeling a bit flat or a bit rubbish, or it's been quite a while since I've experienced any depression, but I think if you've experienced it before, there is always that like that shadow that's there. And when I feel that, feel heavier or feel darker, I can kind of join the dots back and be like, oh, actually this practice has slipped and I haven't done anything that I enjoyed and I've been really stressed at work or whatever. You can kind of join the dots. And I think it's Johan Hari in Lost Connections speaks really eloquently and beautifully around depression and anxiety and mental health, and almost our body giving us these red flags. And so often we don't pay attention to those red flags because we're not paying attention to our own lives most of the time. And that's been my experience anyway. And then it's not until suddenly you wake up in this, or slowly over time, you wake up in this state of just, you know, worthlessness, and you don't want to get out of bed and all of those things. But it's, you know, it's not something that's just happened overnight. It's like a slowly joining the dots. And so all of these practices that I do, all of these things that I'm sure you do as well, it's only to keep me from being in a poor state. It's to help me be in the best state that I can be, rather than what would happen if, you know, if I didn't take all of these practices and do all of these things that I enjoy.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, the more things we try, the more conversations we listen to, the more conversations we have, then you're much more likely to find that one thing or those five things that work for you, you know, your own personal puzzle, right? What's next, man? You're back in the UK. What's any ideas? What's coming next?
not really. low-key petrified about that, but no, I think I've since over time kind of keeping putting myself in these uncomfortable situations, there is this confidence that builds and this blind faith that actually I'm going to be fine. Almost like, you know, turning all your notifications off. It's like, you're going to be fine. You know, nothing that bad is going to happen. And if it does, it's going to be solvable. It almost comes with this this blind faith that everything's happening is meant to be happening. And so I have no idea what is coming next, but what I'm trying to lean into towards is, okay, well, how do I want to spend my days? How do I want to earn money? How much money do I want to earn? What brands would I want to work with? How do I want to spend my time? What do I want my days to look like? And being more in that kind of creative zone than what I've been used to for 12 or so years, which is, this is your job, this is your income, this is what you do day to day. And so it's quite exciting from that aspect, but also quite petrifying. So I'm not too sure in terms of exactly what's coming next. I would love to do more along the food stuff. I would love to, I mean, book one's done so much better than I could ever have imagined. And so I would love to do more stuff alongside that. I don't know what that looks like though, be it events or be it, you know, other books or those kind of things. I don't really know. So I'm just every day going out and doing the things that I love and that light me up, and hopefully, you know, that passes on to other people. And then, you know, I believe that kind of opportunities come into your path that way. You have to actively seek a lot of them out. But if you keep doing things that you love doing, you know, good, more of those things kind of come to you. So it's a bit of a long-winded answer, if I have no idea. but I have no idea, but I have a really good feeling.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a beautiful space to be in. But thank you so much for your time today, Lucy. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Oh, thank you so much for asking me on. And for all, I really, really enjoyed this conversation, Tom. Thank you.
Oh, no worries. Thank you, mate. Thank you.
Listening from the Proper Mental Podcast. Please like and subscribe.
Plus 5 stars.